Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let us have a look at this extract. Yes, question. Line 75. Oh, nor away, yeah. To nor away, this is what normally happens when you have mice in your house. So you have a book, and a mouse will gnaw at this, and therefore it will be gnawed. Yeah. So it's a way of eating away. Yeah, gnaw away, destroy slowly. Yes, thank you. Any more questions? Yeah. Okay, so as usual, we look first of all at who she is and what is her objective. Nothing new here, yeah? Now, remember, the big mistake you could make in the exam is to forget the question, what is her objective? That's bad. Yeah, you must talk about it. Even if you're not sure, then you can say her objective may be... My impression is that her objective is, all this is good. So she is speaking to the Conservative Party conference in 1975. She has just won the leadership election. People are rather surprised. She is the first woman ever to lead. Obviously this is a very important speech because it's her first speech. Everybody in the country will want to know what she says. When it is your 17th speech, well, a lot of people are not interested anymore, but your very first speech, everybody's interested. We have a new Conservative leader. She's a woman. What on earth is going to happen now? Just last year, in 1974, the Conservative lost two elections. There were two elections in 1974, February and October, and the Conservative lost both. When you have two elections the same year, that's always because there's a political crisis. Now we have this the big crisis in 1974, in particular the conflict between the trade unions and the government. Indeed, in the February election in 1974, the Conservative leader said, "We want to have an election to ask one question: who governs Britain? Is it the government or is it the trade unions? Vote for me to show that you want the government." And he lost. And he lost. So you always need to be careful with questions you ask, you know. You might not get it. So in a situation of crisis, economic crisis, political crisis, a new Conservative leader who is known for her ideas. In the Conservative Party, she's known for her ideas. But certainly everybody's going to be interested in this speech. Who is she speaking to? Well, you remember that you often have the immediate audience and the other audience. When Frederick Douglass wrote a letter to my former master, we know that the most important audience was not the master. It was the newspapers. Nelson Mandela, when he speaks at his trial, he's speaking to the judge. But that's not the most important audience. It's the world movements. And here, again, although we have two audiences. The first is the Conservative Party conference. I will talk about that in a moment. But secondly, it will be in every newspaper the next day. Every newspaper. It's the first speech of a new woman leader. Every newspaper will cover extracts. The television will cover extracts. She's a very professional politician. She knows everybody is listening, even internationally. Frankly, what 75? Who is it? Pompidou in France? President Pompidou, 75? Perhaps? Giscard, thank you. Yes, I knew it was some tall guy with a bald head. Yeah. Giscard will have a translation of this speech on his desk the next day. We have a new Conservative leader in Britain. What is she going to do? It will be in Germany, it's the same thing, probably Helmut Kohl. This is a major international event. Now, she's speaking at the Conservative Party conference. So here you need to know something. What is a party conference? They are rather special things that are different in every country. Now, in Britain, then you have a party conference every year. The Labour Party has a conference every year. The Conservative Party has a conference every year. And those are the two big ones. Also the Liberal Party, the Liberal Democrats and the Greens. They all have a conference every year. But these are the big ones. They always have them by the seaside. It's a tradition. They have them in Blackpool or in Brighton. Why not? I think this is because... And they have them in October. I think this is because at the seaside there are a lot of empty hotels in October. That's probably the reason. Who is in the audience? First of all, they're quite big audiences. A couple of thousand people in the audience. And who are they? They are local activists of the Conservative Party. And in Britain, the local activists are particularly important. Because in Britain, even today, but certainly absolutely in the 1970s, because of course in the 1970s, how many votes can you get by Facebook? No Facebook, no internet, etc. So you have the radio and the television, not so important, and you have local activists. And what do the local activists do at every election? Does anybody know this? They knock on every door in town. If there's an election in Manchester, and you live in Manchester, you'll hear a knock on the door, and you open the door. C'est pour ça qu'on ne fait pas ça en France, les gens, ils ouvrent pas la porte. But in England, they open the door and say, hello, and then the person says, hello, I'm from the Conservative Party, and I wonder if we can count on your votes. I did it when I was young, but for the Labour Party. It's quite amusing in a way, because the door opens and you say, hello, I'm from the Labour Party, I wonder if you can count on your vote. And there are three possibilities. One possibility, quite rare, I have some questions, I'm not sure, what does the Labour Party think? Political discussion, you know, maybe you win, maybe you lose, but yeah. A local person, I live just up there, so you can trust me, I have the same experience as you. One possibility. Second possibility, much more common. Oh yes, we're Labour, we're all Labour, yes, don't worry, we'll be there. Good, thank you, bye-bye. Third possibility, and this is so incredibly British. I'm very sorry, love, we're Conservatives. Je cite, there was a very, very typical, it's so British, I'm very sorry, love. Je suis désolé, mon amour. D'accord. It's very British, yeah. So it continues. Interesting, those are very important because this is called canvassing. And then you go away and you note number 17, they say they will vote Labour. Number 18, Conservative. Number 19, don't know. Okay. Then on the day of the election, you sit in front of the polling station and you're from Labour. I was from Labour. The Conservatives are the same. I say, oh, hello, you're going to vote. What is your polling number? And the person is not obliged to tell you. But this is Britain. They always tell you. And then you take it, oh, yes, and you go back to, oh, yes. Ah, look, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, number 16, they said they're definitely voting Labour, but they haven't voted yet. Oh, knock on the door. We have a car here if you would like us to take you to the polling station. And this is all very British because it's all based on trust, because, of course, in theory, you could ask the Conservative Party for a car and then go and vote Labour, in theory. But, you know, as you know, British people are very honest. That's just a little story. But let's say that the local activists are very important and they win elections and lose elections. And so certainly Margaret Thatcher wants the people in the room to go away and say, oh, yes, I'm definitely going to work very hard at the next election. This is wonderful. So she is not trying to persuade them, not really. Yeah. And this is why she does not use statistics. You know, for example, at one point she says, many of the best people in Britain are thinking of leaving the country and go and emigrating. She doesn't say, there are 23,464 people who emigrated last year, because she's not trying to convince them. They're her people. They already mostly agree. They're not sure on everything, but they mostly agree. So this is not a persuasive. It's more a morale boosting, yeah? She wants to give them the impression. What does she want them to go away thinking? She wants people to leave the conference saying, I think we can win. With a lead, yeah, I think we can win with a leader like that. So it's very much about impressing things. But she will use some particular arguments. So that's about her objective, is to raise morale, to raise the confidence of the Conservative Party. Even though they lost the last two elections, she wants them to be persuaded that they can win the next one. In fact, the next one is actually 4 years away, but she will have some success in that. But she also uses particular arguments. These arguments, this is all before she is Prime Minister. Thatcherism, nobody knows the word. Nobody knows the word Thatcherism in 1975. They discover this word in 1981, after she has been in Prime Minister for 2 years. But the argument she uses here will foreshadow, which they will show us, some of the laws she is going to pass in the future. So let's have a look at them. I sometimes think that the Labour Party is like a pub where the mild is running out. If someone does not do something soon, all that is left will be bitter, and all that is bitter will be left. Now, I think this is probably impossible for you, this sentence. It's a joke. This sentence is a joke, but I don't think anybody understands it. In the 20th century, in every pub, there were the two kinds of beer that almost everybody drank was bitter and mild. And so what she says, the Labour Party is like a pub and they have no mild left. So soon everything will be bitter. Eh bien, sûr, bitter, ça veut dire aussi amer. So it's a play on words. It's not a very good joke, but it's a joke. And this is... This has some importance in that you probably noticed in British culture, jokes are obligatory. You are obliged to make jokes. Now, I must admit, I have not become completely French. Yeah? Maybe one day. I do get very angry when people say pain au chocolat. That's pretty French, isn't it? Yeah? It's a chocolatine. I feel very French when I get worked up about this. Yeah? Also, when somebody says I'm buying a car, and I ask them how much it was, and I want to know in old francs, yeah, quand je compte en ancien franc, je me sens en train de mon français. Mais bon, bref. Revenons à la question. Okay, so an obligatory joke. Whenever I visit communist countries, their politicians never hesitate to boast about their achievements. They know them all by heart. They reel off the facts and figures, claiming this is the rich harvest of the communist system. Yet, they are not prosperous, as we in the West are prosperous, and they are not free, as we in the West are free. Okay, so she's going to say, hey, why are we not going around saying capitalism is wonderful? I'm Margaret Thatcher. I think capitalism is wonderful. We should say it. Now, for the last 30 years, the Conservative Party has been saying, capitalism is good, but the welfare state is very important, because the political situation was such that the post-war settlement was respect the welfare state, don't attack the welfare state too much. And she is saying, let's say capitalism is wonderful, private enterprise is wonderful, and this will lead her to privatize the nationalization. Individual property is wonderful, and this will lead her to reduce the amount of social housing. Competition is wonderful, and this will lead her to put hospitals into competition. Now, because she is talking to the Conservative Party conference, everybody agrees with her here. Look at the communists. Huh. Our countries are much richer. Capitalism makes people richer. It's slightly unfair comparison, because what she wants people to think is, look at Russia. Look at France, Germany, and the United States. Capitalism makes people rich. She is not going to mention capitalist countries like India, Botswana, Ethiopia. Yeah, there are also many poor capitalist countries. She's not going to talk about that. She's going to talk about the richer countries. How would I say that? I would say that critics might say that she is only talking about the rich countries, and there are also many poor countries which are not communist. Our capitalist system produces a far higher standard of prosperity and happiness because it believes in incentive and opportunity, and because it is founded on human dignity and freedom. So why are people in the West happier? Notice she does not feel a need to prove that people in the West are happier. That's everybody. We all agree in the Conservative Party conference that people in the West are happier. If you're comparing with the dictatorship, it's probably true. But if you compare India and Ethiopia, it might not be. And the reason is because we believe in incentive. We believe it. So incentive is like entrepreneurship. Ambition. These are all good things. Incentive is good. Ambition is good. Individual property is good. And this is the reason we are happier. Now, again, she's not trying to prove something to the audience. The audience has similar ideas. So she's just putting them together in a way which encourages them. Even the Russians have to go to a capitalist country, America, to buy enough wheat to feed their people. And that after more than 50 years of a state-controlled economy. Yet they, the communists, boast incessantly, while we, who have so much more to boast about, forever criticize and decry. Is it not time we spoke up for our way of life? After all, no Western nation has to build a wall around itself to keep its people in. What wall is she talking about? Has anybody got this? I know it's a long time ago. Which part of the communist bloc built a wall to keep their people in? You got an idea? Yes, exactly. This is the Berlin Wall. Now, I understand that you might have forgotten it. The Berlin Wall was destroyed in 1991. How old were you in 19... Never forget it. Okay, right. So this was at the end of the Second World War. Russia occupied part of Germany. America, Britain, and France, I think, occupied the rest. And as tensions lift, they separated East Germany, controlled by the Russians, really, and West Germany, controlled by the Americans for a while. However, they had a problem with Berlin. Berlin, the big, rich capital, was in the middle of East Germany. And so what they did is they divided Berlin into two, East Berlin and West Berlin. And West Berlin was attached to West Germany, which was a couple of hundred kilometers away. Eventually they found an agreement where there was an individual road, just one road, which was allowed to bring supplies in after a long conflict. But it's certainly true that the reason for the wall around East around West Berlin, built by East Germany around West Berlin, the reason for the wall was to stop East Germans going to the West. It's certainly true. And so she's using this as an example. Capitalist countries don't need to do this. Communist countries. Now, whether you consider that East Germany and Russia were really communist or not is another question, but they certainly were for Margaret Thatcher. So she is mocking communism. She's mocking communism. Ah, look at them. They have to build a wall to keep their people in. Isn't that ridiculous? So some of her arguments are stronger than others. Like, as I was saying, to say that the West makes everybody rich is clearly untrue. It's also a slightly bizarre way of looking at the world, because it's not surprising that there was a revolution in poor countries because people were more desperate. Okay. So her solution here is she thinks that we, people in the West, we should be proud of capitalism. So this is her argument, yeah? So it's very much an emotional argument. It's a little bit of a moral crusade. She is not, you always have to remember, what is she not doing? She is not proposing specific policies. She does not say, my government is going to privatise the gas industry, my government is going to do this. That's not the objective here. The objective here is to to encourage the Conservative Party and to say supporters of capitalism need to be proud and make a lot of noise and move forward And we need to stop the old way, in her opinion, of apologising for capitalism. Oh, well, yeah, capitalism is okay, but we need a lot of state intervention to stop the capitalism from causing too much poverty. And indeed, one of the biggest changes with Margaret Thatcher's government, so it's not just political tactics, is that before Margaret Thatcher, every government said, we better do this to stop unemployment rising. We better do this to stop unemployment rising. There was a big fear of mass unemployment, which had not existed since 1939. There was no mass employment after 1939. Not in 1939, not in 1949, not in 1959, not in 1969. And so governments and the people were very frightened of this. And Margaret Thatcher's government said, that's life. If there is mass employment, that's life. And after 5 years of Margaret Thatcher's government, the unemployment was 3 million. It was the highest since the 1930s. And this is important because there's not just the politics, there's also the economics. That is to say that when you have 3 million unemployed people, the trade unions become much weaker. Because when the trade union says, we want more money, we want more wages, the boss says, well, actually, there's 3 million unemployed workers out there. You can't have any more money. Whereas during the post-war boom, the situation was very different. I remember in 1968 or 9, my father was a milkman. He delivered milk. And the boss said, we're changing the system. You have to deliver 4 more streets. My father said, no, I don't want to do that. I quit. And he left his job on Thursday, and he found a new job on Monday. Spoiler, don't do this. It doesn't work anymore. But that was just, that was the situation, you know. And so the bosses began to treat you better, because you just walk out and say, bye. It worked at the time. Yeah, like I say, don't do it. Wait until things get better. So let us have no truck with those who say the free enterprise system has failed. What we face today is not a crisis of capitalism, but of socialism. No country can flourish if its economic and social life is dominated by nationalisation and state control. Okay, so she's saying openly nationalisation is a bad thing. Whereas the Conservatives had accepted nationalisation for some time. And indeed, this will lead to her privatising gas, electricity, and so on. But interestingly enough, as I said, Thatcher will be defeated in 1990, but Thatcherism will not. And Tony Blair, the next government, will privatise the railways. The British railways are private today. Now, dangerous left-wing people like myself, we always like to talk about the railways. Because the privatisation of the railways was just a disaster. I mean, for some time you could not be sure of getting to where you were going. But it's a little bit unfair to talk about the railways because it's not really a typical privatisation. So, for example, they privatised the telephones. It had advantages and disadvantages, but it was not an obvious disaster to every customer. The railways was an obvious so we like to talk about the railways because it's a good argument for us, you know. But it's a bit unfair because, like I say, some of the privatisations for the customers were not necessarily so disastrous. So here, if you were commenting on this, you know, as soon as she mentions here nationalisation as a bad thing, then you must give 2 examples of something she privatised. It's not. C'est pas non plus de la physique nucléaire. Okay. The cause of our shortcomings does not, therefore, lie in private enterprise. Our problem is not that we have too little socialism, it is that we have too much. If only the Labour Party in this country would act like Social Democrats in West Germany. If only they would stop trying to prove their socialist virility by relentlessly nationalising one industry after another. So she mentions West Germany, which reminds us that Germany is still divided until 1990, sometime in the beginning of the 1990s. perhaps 89, I'm not sure, around that time, not very far from there, give or take a year or two. And she mentions the West German Social Democrats, who at this time were more like Tony Blair is later. That is to say that they accepted, the West German Social Democrats had much more respect for private enterprise and capitalism than the British Labour Party at this time. So that's the first thing, the first thing she says in the first few paragraphs is, we need to be proud of capitalism. We need a conservative party which is not going from door to door saying, well, we're doing our best to make capitalism a bit better. We need people going from door to door saying, private enterprise is good, capitalism is excellent. We have some ideas. Would you like to buy your council house? Etc. And so she believed that it was possible to transform, or rather, it was possible to make capitalism popular, and that the ideal for her was that every working man would have some capital. Perhaps they would own their house, or perhaps they would have a few shares. So this idea that the individual is the most important, this is what we sometimes call radical individualism, and which she got from philosophers like Friedrich Hayek. And this is the new conservatism to deal in the situation of the crisis. And she talks about how much she loves freedom. Now, of course, this is Siedebunger, but it also... critics would doubt how important freedom was for her in some respects. For example, she was a close personal friend of General Pinochet, the Chilean dictatorship. She wasn't just, it's not, I mean, when you're a prime minister, you talk to dictators, that's part of the job. But no, he was a close personal friend. After she was no longer prime minister, she invited him to her house, yes, he was a close personal friend, because he believed in the free market, and that was the most important thing for her. So that's the first thing. The second thing, in the second part, she is going to say, one, we must be proud of capitalism and free enterprise. And number two, she says, there is an enemy in our country. Who is the enemy within? It is the Solis Islamogush. Ah, no, pardon. C'est plus tard. It's at this time. It is communist teachers, left-wing teachers. This is what she's going to talk about. Let's have a look at it. Of course, a halt to further state control will not on its own restore our belief in ourselves, because something else is happening to this country. We are witnessing a deliberate attack on our values. A deliberate attack on those who wish to promote merit and excellence. A deliberate attack on our heritage and our great past. Okay, so she's saying that not only do we need to be, we conservatives need to be more powerful, but we also need to oppose all of those people who are saying, oh, the British Empire was terrible. We need to think about the racist heritage of British history. This is the 1970s. For the first time, you have black movements in Britain making a bit of noise. The Asian youth movement, the Mouvement de la Jeunesse Asiatique, is making a lot of noise. Je vous rappelle que Asian en Grande-Bretagne, ça veut dire Indo-Pakistanais. There are a few black movements. There were very, very few in the 50s and 60s. In the 70s, you begin to get black movements, anti-racist movements. The Anti-Nazi League will begin a couple of years later. Rock Against Racism in 1977. So there's a number of people, a number of noises. And when she talks about our great past, it is really, you have to think the British Empire. There's nothing, you know, notre passé glorieux. It's got to be the international influence of the British Empire. And she certainly did have a positive view of the British Empire. There are those who gnaw away at our national self-respect, rewriting British history as centuries of unrelieved gloom, oppression and failure, as days of hopelessness, not days of hope. And others, teachers, and Bella Moore teachers, but she's talking about teachers, and others under the shelter of our education system are ruthlessly attacking the minds of the young. Yeah. So our children are being brainwashed by left-wing teachers. J'ai toujours considéré que l'idée que les profs peuvent manipuler les étudiants pour être d'accord avec eux, je suis désolé, hein, mais le trotskisme en France irait beaucoup mieux si mes étudiants étaient tout de suite manipulés par moi. C'est assez rare quand même. Ok. Everyone who believes in freedom must be appalled at the tactics employed by the far left in the systematic destruction of the North London Polytechnic. The North London Polytechnic is a university in London. It's now a university. A polytechnic was like another kind of young adult institution. I'm afraid I don't know the particular scandal or the particular argument she's talking about, but we know that in universities, every now and then, there is a scandal about a political scandal or political controversy. Recently at Sciences Po, there was one. You know, where people disagree on what kind of meetings are acceptable in a university, and then you know it becomes very very high temperature. And so this is what she's talking about. So she's saying that you know she wants people to loudly defend conservative ideas. Yeah. This is a period. The 1970s is a period of crisis on controversy, big strikes, and big movements. And she said, "Well, we conservatives, we need to get stronger and louder and prouder and more ambitious. We need a much more combative conservative party." The conservative party in the 1960s was very rather quiet, rather polite. They worked at election time, but they were not crusaders. And Thatcher said, "We need crusaders. We need people who are ready to fight for conservative ideas." And I think she was partly successful. She was partly successful. Although one of the complicated things about Thatcherism is I've told you some of the changes that Thatcher made. However, many of these changes, not all of these changes, but many of these changes were also made in other countries by other governments. So privatisation. There's been a lot of privatization in France with no Thatcher. So, you know, it's not direct link. Although some changes have gone much further in Britain. For example, if I remember correctly, you do not pay €11,000 a year to come to university, do you? That's good. which is the cost in Britain today. This was not introduced by Margaret Thatcher, but it is Thatcherism, which continued after Margaret Thatcher. And it's very typical Thatcherism, because the idea is you want a good job, so you have decided to go to university for you to get a good job with a higher salary, so you should pay. The individual is what counts. That's Thatcherism. Whereas the welfare state position is our society needs doctors and lawyers and English teachers, so our society pays for education. You know, individualism and collectivism on the other side. We must not be bullied or brainwashed out of our beliefs. No wonder so many of our people, some of the best and brightest, are depressed and talking of emigrating. Even so, I think they are wrong. They are giving up too soon. Many of the things we hold dear are threatened as never before, but none has yet been lost. So stay here. Stay and help us defeat socialism so that the Britain you have known may be the Britain your children will know. So the last sentence here is very much a very standard conservative expression. We want, you have children. Well, not yet, but you might have. Most of you don't have yet. What would be wonderful, says Margaret Thatcher, is if Britain, the Britain your children know, will be the same Britain that you know. That's a very classic conservative idea. A little bit mythical, because you know how much things have changed in the last 10 years. It's very unlikely that your children will know the same France that you know. And so she's the other thing here is that she says, many wonderful people are thinking of leaving Britain because it's so terrible under the Labour government. Now, of course, she doesn't have to prove this. This is a rhetorical flourish, c'est de bonne guerre, as we say, and that's what we're going into now. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening so carefully. Next week, the Labour Party...